Welcome to 20 Minute Tabletop, a podcast about board games, card games, and even those games where you get to construct your own little figures, paint them, and push them around so they can fight each other. But today, I'm going to be talking about a game that doesn't involve little violent men, but instead involves tiny little woodland critters, little friends, little woodland animals, and that game is Everdell. Almost sounds, doesn't it, Everdell, like something Tolkien would have made up. And I think the appeal of this game is it really taps into your inner child. It's reminiscent of Watership Down, but without the crying. I used to love Redwall. I don't know if any of you read that when you were kids, by Brian Jacks, and Beatrix Potter, Wind in the Willows, that anthropomorphised animals that you want to play with. And games are about playing, and I suppose we all started by anthropomorphising our little teddy bears, and Everdell brings you back into that space, a safe, happy space, without conflict. And when I first got it out of the box, what I noticed was that the inner child in me was definitely triggered, because I took out the little creatures that you can play as, and I believe you can play as either a mouse, or a squirrel, or a little turtle, or tortoise. I think there's a hedgehog in there as well. And when I got out these little wooden animal meeples, I looked at the squirrel and I thought, I have to be that squirrel in this game. I really, really want to play as the squirrel. But nonchalantly, as a sort of 42-year-old man, I just took the animals and nobly put them in the centre of the table and said to my gaming group, who would you like to be? And the squirrels went, and my heart was broken a little bit. But that's the power of Everdell, a Tolkien-esque title and a fantasy world which drops you in with woodland creatures. Look, it's fairly clear, isn't it? All you gamers out there will know already that a game is essentially just the pairing of a series of mechanics and theme. And some games will get away with really limited theming and still be great. A good example of that is Scout, which is a small box card game by Oink Games, where the theme is literally pasted on. It's got a circus style theme, but really it's just numbered cards. And you can have a little bit of a whimsical play at that theme when you're playing Scout. You can say to somebody, yeah, you think your jugglers are good? Well, look at this, I've got a juggler, somebody coming out of a cannon. But the theme is, well, it's secondary really. And the mind, the card game, it's got a ninja mouse style theme and it's just pasted on. But Everdell is different in the sense that it's a game that marries theme and mechanics so well that it elevates it up into classic territory. Essentially, it is a simple worker placement game combined with a tableau building game, but it's the theming within that makes it feel so special. To the point that I really feel the need to give out a little bit of a shout out to Andrew Bosley, the artist who drew and illustrated all the cards of Everdell. I remember first seeing it. Where I found my copy of Everdell was strangely in the charity shop, but it wasn't amongst all the tattered and battered old games of Cluedo and Monopoly underneath the books where you'd expect to find the board games, but it was face up in a glass cabinet, and I was greeted by this picture of a badger staring into a golden horizon with some butterflies around him, and the badger's holding a staff, and there's a little whimsical looking mouse making direct eye contact here, stood behind this badger, a little squirrel carrying some food down a kind of golden pathway. And it's great. I mean, it's really, really great. And every part of the art illustration in this game is wonderful. It's a real object to enjoy, and the board itself is brilliant. It kind of represents a meadow, and what you get in there is a three-dimensional tree that you've got to construct called the Evertree. And I know that there have been some manufacturers making wooden versions of that for pretty much the cost of the game, but even the cardboard equivalent is fantastic and completely unnecessary really to have a three-dimensional tree in the middle of this meadow. But just like Camel Up, if you've got a dice tower or wingspan where you've got a bird feeder, just having that tree, again, it just elevates the game just one extra level with the theming. So it's no surprise to me that Everdell was a massive hit. It was released in 2018 and produced by Starling Games. Since then, it's developed its own history, its lore, and the different expansions of Everdell technically represent different eras. So like I said before, it's essentially a tableau building, worker placement style game, where ultimately you end up making a little city of 15 cards of critters and constructions over four seasons. What you get is a meadow area, which is essentially a shared pool, or I guess what you'd call it, a trade row, and that's accessible to all players. They can all purchase cards that are in the meadow, but you'll have your own personal hand of cards as well. And all these cards will essentially be one of two types of card. They'll either be a little critter that can live in your city, a little animal that has a job. So you might find that you get a little peddler, that's a common critter, or you might get an undertaker who could work in this city, a little barge toad sitting on a boat, and a chip sweep. And as I've just got a pile of cards in my hand, and honestly, I can't tell you how well drawn out all of these cards are. It's such a finger beauty. It really is. You could have a wood carver, all types of little critters. And the critters themselves will either be common critters or they'll be classified as a unique critter. You also get places that you can represent in your little tableau of cards. You can have cemeteries and theatres, a resin refinery, dungeon, a farm, or even the Evertree. You can have that, or a crane. And it's got certain Seven Wonders vibes where you can either pay in resources to get something. So for example, if you wanted to pay for a cemetery, that would cost you 2 stone. Or if you wanted to build a theatre, you'd have to pay 3 wood, 1 resin and 1 stone. But like Seven Wonders, if you actually own the mine, then you can get, if you ever have it in your hand, you can play the Minor Mole for free. So you get to, just like in Seven Wonders, where having built a certain monument in first age, then in the second age you get to play the upgrade of that monument for free, as it were. In this game, if you have the location, you get to play the person that would work there for free. So it's a game that I don't think is particularly complicated to play. They have bought a child's version called My Little Everdell, but I have played this game with my 6-year-old kid quite successfully, and he didn't really have too much issue with it. I mean, your options are on your turn. You can place a worker, and each player has a collection of worker pieces represented by those little animal meeples, and the workers perform actions which help you develop your tableau. So some of the standard actions you might do are gathering resources, little lovely squishy tactile berries, or some little textured pieces of wood. Or you could draw some more cards to allow you more options in order to place more locations or critters. And you can take a series of special actions. So you can place your workers, or you can play a card. And the only thing you have to think about there is you really do have only 15 spaces in your city tableau, as it were. So you've got to be careful about what you put down. And of course, the cards interact with each other, and there are numerous strategies that you can make by deciding what kind of cards you play in your city. And there's a large variety of working cities. I probably played this game about 5 to 10 times and still feel like I've only scratched the surface about how it actually works. But of course, when you run out of critters, what you can do is you can do an action called preparing for the next season. And what happens there is all of your workers are returned from their places on the board where you've placed them to take your actions. And you actually gain another couple of workers, or 1 or 2 or 3 workers, depending on what season that you're moving into. And the game plays from winter through to the onset of the following winter, at which point the player with the city with the most points win. So you get a little bit of a point salad kind of affair at the end. But it isn't really that complicated to work out. It's also quite unique in the sense that one player might be in a different season before another player may have joined that season, depending on how efficiently they have played their workers through the season that they're in. So at the end of the game, it may be the case that you're just watching one player who still has three or four workers left to play, who's desperately trying to get the most out of the cards that are left and the actions that they have left, even though you've finished. But that bit of the game doesn't take too long and isn't particularly stressful. So yeah, I would say if you like games that are kind of worker placement style, but feel that you might be attracted to the theme of little woodland critters, then I don't think you should look past Everdell really. It's a game that is really, really good. It's easy to play. The actions are very, very simple. The manual is excellent to navigate through. The theming is brilliant. The component quality is second to none. And should you ever think I have reached the point where this game is feeling a little bit dry to me, there are possibilities of expanding and buying lots and lots of different expansions for Everdell, should you wish to. Though I wouldn't recommend that you went straight in with the big box of Everdell. It's just unnecessary. And it's massive. I've read reviews about this box being really, really oversized. I mean, if that's your vibe, if you want to collect the big box and want to have everything that Everdell can offer, then crack on. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do. It's your life. It's your Kallax. But for me, I think that you could pretty much start with a base game and get lots and lots of play out of it for the need to expand outwards.
Hello, Kev here. Like you, I've just listened to Tom's relaxing delve into the woodland world of Everdell. And it sounds lovely, but I do feel like I have to give a riposte to his accusation of tiny violent men in the miniature Warhammer gaming space. Because it can be tiny violent anything. There's even a game called Turnip 28, which is about tiny violent root vegetables, where you can have a team of Napoleonic turnips scrapping it out against other root vegetables. And on that theme, there is a game called Burrows and Badgers, which, much like Everdell, focuses on a world of anthropomorphized mice and barn owls and otters. But in this game, the woodland critters aren't striving to build a better world, a bustling city. You've got badgers trying to smash the skulls of hares with maces. So if that sounds interesting, we'll have a look at that alternate world of independent games, particularly focusing on Burrows and Badgers. So when the uninitiated think about miniature war games, they often think of space marines and barbarians and orcs with axes. But those tropes, whilst they are fun and very popular, are just one part of a really varied marketplace. And the range of independent games is growing all the time. And Burrows and Badgers is an example of one of the really varied examples of independent war games. So it's the brainchild of Michael Lovejoy, who's not only written the rules, but I understand has also created the sculpts of the miniatures that you can buy for this game. So a really talented individual. It's published by Osprey Games, and you can buy a copy of the hardback, beautifully illustrated game manual. And all the illustrations are actually done by Gary Chalk, who is the illustrator famous for the Redwall series of books that Tom mentioned, which involves woodland creatures in a fantasy environment. And that theme sums up the feel of the game. Burrows and Badgers is set in a fantasy world on Northumbria, which obviously is based on the north of England in a fantasy setting. The king is missing, the land is in turmoil, and the creatures have taken it to themselves to kind of sort this mess out. And the creatures within the kingdom are in a fantasy universe, so think swords and maces rather than laser guns. As I've discussed many times on the podcast before, it's a miniature skirmish game, meaning it's only small numbers of models that you'll be bringing to the table. So think typically between 3 and 10 in your warband. And the warbands are created out of all kinds of diverse woodland creatures. And these creatures in the game are categorised as small, large and massive. Small being 30mm bases, large 40mm and massive 50mm bases. So a small animal may be a bat, a rabbit or a mouse. Large animals are things like wildcats, whereas massive are badgers, beavers and hounds. And as you can imagine, there's some list building rules about the combination of the sizes of these kind of creatures you can have. And there's also restrictions on the type of creatures you can get based on how many Northumbria pennies that you have to spend in the game. Now you start with 350 Northumbria pennies to build your warband, and that will not allow you to take huge amounts of massive creatures. You'll be starting off quite a small crew, and you'll grow it as the game goes through a campaign game, because whilst you can just play one-off games, it's certainly not a competitive tournament type game. It's something that you'll be enjoying with a small group, maybe one other player, over a series of games playing out a campaign from maybe the 10 or so scenarios that are in the book and the extra ones that are published on the website from time to time. So once you've selected the creatures that are going to be in your warband, you'll also assign a group that they will be part of. So these could be the Royalists, the Rogues, the Free Beasts, or the Wild Beasts. And each one of these generic classes will give different benefits to the animals in your warband. The Royalists, for example, are better at fighting. The Free Beasts are more like a black market type faction where they get access to all kinds of interesting equipment. The Wild Beasts get movement bonuses across severe terrain, which is a big part of the game. So now that you have a warband with a few animals in it, maybe three or four, you've got a class or a faction that you belong to, you now need to select a den. Now, depending on the type of faction you've selected, different dens are available, but there are a number to choose from. You've got abandoned burrows, ruined farmsteads, or town buildings, and each one of these serves as a base of operations throughout the campaign. So when you come back to the base, you'll be allowed to recharge, and depending on if you take upgrades to the base throughout the campaign, you'll be able to increase the stats and abilities of your warband. For example, you may choose to spend some pennies that you've earned in the campaign to upgrade to a library or a chapel. So these things are going to give you bonuses for casting spells or maybe extra recovery. So the campaign element of the game is absolutely massive. So you're going to be earning points, searching for hidden items, spending those points or pennies that you've accrued throughout the campaign in improving your warband to recruit extra operatives or maybe to give them enhanced equipment. But as with all campaign type games, there's also a downside. So the team members will suffer injuries throughout the battle, so they may suffer penalties to movement or have a reduced number of wounds for future battles. And this is perhaps a good time to talk about those stats, because for a relatively simple game in the grand scheme of things, they've got quite complicated statistics for the individual models. In fact, there's 9 characteristics that the models will be relying on throughout their campaign. And they are move, strike, block, ranged, nimbleness, concealment, awareness, fortitude, and presence. And all those are pretty unusual. You usually see things like agility and strength and toughness. So this is a much more rich canvas on which to paint a character in the game. Another cool and unusual aspect of this game is the dice mechanics, because unlike using D6s in most war games, or even cards in my favourite game, Malifaux, this uses a handful of polyhedral dice, or RPG dice. So if you're not familiar with this, it's just different shaped dice from D4 all the way up to D20, so different shaped dice with different odds. And all of the stats will be given not as a number, but as a dice value. So a low stat would be a D4, so giving the numbers available 1 to 4, whereas a high stat would be a D20, giving the numbers 1 to 20. Now, interestingly, this is going to create some asymmetry between the different creatures within the game. So a mouse, for example, is going to be pretty weak. It's going to have D4 values, whereas a badger, which is big, a massive creature in the game, is more likely to have a D12 or above. And these dice values can be upgraded within limits during the game. But within the heat of battle, even the smallest warrior can take down the biggest creature. So you want a situation where a mouse is going to be able to maybe find a chink in the armour of a badger and bring that down. And the way the game handles this is by having criticals. So even though you may have a lower value, like D4, the top value of that dice is considered critical and will give you +7 to that roll. So whereas a badger may have a D20 on some stat, that's only a 1 in 20 chance of getting a critical hit, whereas a mouse has got a D4, so 1 in 4 chance of getting a hit. So it reflects the idea that these smaller creatures are going to be more nimble and more capable of striking a critical blow. So into the gameplay now, and it's played over standard rounds, and you start off with the initiative phase, moving into an action phase, and then the end of the battle. Now it shares some common features with my favourite types of miniature skirmish games. And that is, it's not just a case of killing all the other members of the other team. The victory conditions are way more nuanced and defined in the individual scenarios within the campaign. It also fits that standard small table experience, with games typically be playing anywhere between a 2-foot and a 4-foot mat, although I believe most games are actually played on a 3-foot mat, so you're going to need some terrain, maybe a game mat, although like all of these games, you could just play with pennies and pepper pots and things on your kitchen table if you want, but I think you probably would miss out on quite a lot of the charm of the game if you did. The game then proceeds in an I go, you go fashion. So unlike army scale games, which are often move all your guys and your opponent moves all their guys, it's move one model, then your opponent moves a model, which gives a way more dynamic gameplay. During your turn, you're going to be choosing from a number of actions, such as sprinting, attacking, shooting, casting spells. And it's worth noting the movement, which is quite interesting. You can't take a move as its own action. The move's built into a lot of these actions, such as hiding, where you'll take a move and then attempt to hide. And another thing that I like about the movement mechanics, which is something I've never seen before, is you may have a movement of D6. This means under normal circumstances, you'll move 6 inches. But should you be crossing some kind of severe terrain, you'll actually roll a D6 and you'll move that far. So that's the way it handles kind of movement debuffs, which is really interesting. So throughout your turn, you're going to be trying to engage with the scenario objectives. So that might be finding items or killing a particular model on the opponent's team. You'll be casting spells and gathering materials. And in fact, in the campaign upkeep phase, you could have got an opportunity to go to the shop and buy reagents for these materials and these spells so that you can actually get bonuses to casting the spells or maybe ensure that it goes off instead of having to rely on the dice. So a really interesting game system. Something that is way different from the guns and swords that you expect in the Games Workshop style games. And a nice little link to Tom's World of Everdell. So as always, if you enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you shared it with your friends. And even better, give us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. That really helps us. We've got an Instagram page and a little plug for myself. If you particularly enjoy miniature war games or Arkham Horror, have a look at tabletopupgrades.co.uk. And that's the place where I sell all of the items that I manufacture for miniature war games and Arkham Horror the Living Card Game. Upgrades, accessories, dials, measuring sticks, token sets, it's all there, and it'd be great if you'd check it out. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.